Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. For those of you just joining us, we are on location today, broadcasting from the EWTN booth at the Los Angeles Religious Ed Congress. The Religious Ed Congress is held each year here at the Anaheim Convention Center, right across the street from Disneyland, and it's now the largest annual gathering of Catholics in the United States. Thank you to everyone from EWTN who has made it possible for us to broadcast live from the floor of the Congress today. I am your host, Cy Kellett, and this hour we ask, is conscience king? There can often be confusion about the role of conscience in the moral life. Are we ruled by our conscience? What happens when our conscience is wrong? And what does God expect from us in relation to our conscience? 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Dr. Pia De Seleni, a theologian, ethicist, and cultural analyst. She serves as the associate dean of the Augustine Institute, just a few miles from here, actually, on the campus of Christ Cathedral here in Orange County. She's an expert on issues relating to women's health, life issues, the new feminism, Catholicism, and culture. Her work has appeared all over in the Wall Street Journal Europe, in the Washington Post, actually a fantastic article in the Washington Post on women and the priesthood, if I remember right.
Right. Yeah.
Dr. De Seleni received her doctorate in sacred theology summa cum laude from the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross, Rome. She received the 2001 award from the Pontifical Academies for her doctoral work, and she got that from the hands of none other than now Saint Pope John Paul II. Dr. Seleni, thanks so much for being with us here today.
It's great to be with you, Cy.
So you got to meet Pope John Paul II?
I did, actually, several times.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm.
Any good stories? Anything you, or maybe, well, I should say it this way, like, what stands out in your mind recalling him?
I think when I received the award, several people had said to me, well, no, tons of people knew I was going over, and they said, you know, tell the Holy Father this, tell the Holy Father that, as if I were going to have, you know, five-course dinner and drinks before and, you know, cognac afterwards, right? And so, you know, I had 2 seconds, and so I just, when I met him, I just said, you know, I knelt and kissed his ring, and I said, I just want you to know that there's this whole John Paul II generation that loves you and prays for you. And I think, you know, he looked at me, and actually another story that I like even better was the next day. My entire family, well, almost my entire family and some friends had come to Rome with me to receive the award. And we'd had a bishop write a letter so that we could go to private mass. And we never heard anything. So finally, one of my friends who was traveling with me, she said, you really have to call, you know, and find out. And so I called the Vatican switchboard. And if you've ever heard their Muzak, it's awful.
And I have not. I've missed that pleasure.
You can do that. I can give you the number later. Anyway, so the Muzak is awful. And they have me on hold. And I'm ready to hang up. And my friend is saying, no, you can't hang up. Stay on. So all of a sudden, this deep voice comes on. And in Italian, he says to me, I saw your picture in La Salvatore Romano. Well, it's Archbishop Givish, the Pope's secretary. And so he said, you know, why didn't your family get to meet the Holy Father today? I said, Your Excellency, I barely got to meet the Holy Father, right? So he said, fine, we don't have room for the Mass, but come after the Mass. And so we went, and then one of my friends who lived in Rome called, and she said, is there any way I can bring my kids? I want them to meet the Holy Father. I said, just come. So we're standing there at the bronze door at 7 in the morning waiting to go up. We go past the Swiss Guard, and then one of those gentlemen in waiting looks at me, and he says, so you were supposed to be Pia De Seleni with a total of 10 people. You now have 2 extra people. And he wasn't even counting the kids, right? And so I said, eh. And he says, so one of you cannot go in to meet, or two of you cannot go in to meet, no, he said one. One of you cannot go in to meet the Holy Father. And I said, well, that's fine. I met him yesterday, so these people can go. And he looks at me, and in Italian, he says, signorina. And he just gives me this look, like, come on, you're the only reason these people are here. So finally he let us all in. And when I knelt before the Holy Father this time, he took my face in his hands, and he said, I remember you. All in Italian. He's like, I remember you. I know who you are. So it was really, it was a very touching moment.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Do you think he was aware of how important his impact was on that John Paul II generation that you told him about?
You know, I have no way of knowing that. I mean, but I've met so many people who came to their vocations because of it. I mean, one of my priest friends who... A classmate, he was with the mission, is with the Missionaries of Charity. He was living in one of the Latin American countries. He was not living a life within the church. His mother had been praying for him, and the Holy Father was visiting, and he saw the Holy Father at a distance and realized he had a priestly vocation.
Wow.
And I know so many stories of those like that, and I mean, the Holy Father had such a heart, especially for youth, that... I don't know. Maybe he wouldn't think of it in terms of impact, but I think he saw these as his spiritual children.
Yep.
And I remember
one
time at Easter they had the big UNIV conferences, and so these are for university students during Holy Week coming to Rome, and the Holy Father was by that time is hunched over, you know, this old man, and he's sometimes a little bit of drool, and you know, and when he came out on stage for the UNIV meeting. He just, like, little by little, he straightened up. And he was just he was having a blast.
Oh, wow.
Just having a blast. I mean, I think that young people just made him feel alive.
Yeah.
And he made young people feel alive. That's the irony, you know. And I was at one of the World Youth Days towards the end of his life. And, again, you know, how many... there's no rock star that's going to generate this type of attention. Right. And here's this old man that gets kids to sleep in the rain and the mud and the fields, you know. And he is life-giving, and I think he received life from young
that,
people.
Yeah. Right. Dr. Pia De Seleni is our guest this hour. Our topic is Conscience King. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. We are broadcasting live from the LA Religious Ed Conference, so maybe there'll be some folks who want to ask you a question here. We have a microphone if they want to do that. Dr. Seleni, what is conscience? To me, I have a mental image of what a conscience is. It's a little cricket.
Right.
And he's wearing kind of a coat and a top hat. And when he tells me what's right and what's wrong. Is that a Catholic view of what a conscience is? Or
can we build on it?
Okay. That was very politic.
It's good that we have a starting point,
okay.
Right?
Yes, but you do know who I'm referring to then.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes he talks to me, too.
Okay. Well, that's a little right next to Disneyland here.
There you go. No, the first thing that I would point out with conscience is I think so many of us have this sense that it's a feeling, you know, or it's a sense. I have this sense. My gut tells me, right? And I point my students back to the very meaning of the word conscience. In Latin, it's conscire, right? It means to know with knowledge. So to do something with knowledge, it means that you are informed, right?
Oh.
It doesn't mean, well, I have this inkling and, you know, or I don't know, something's kind of telling me to go this way. It means that you're actually informed. And the Catechism teaches that it's this privileged place in the human person, right? It's this privileged, it has a privileged place. And yet it's something, even though it's unique and it's something that belongs to everyone, It takes work to form it. And, you know, whenever I give faithful citizenship talks, you know, every 4 years we all get nervous because Catholics are going to get out there and vote, and they might not vote the way we want them to, and so forth, right? So I've done these talks at parishes and so forth, and I pointed out to people, if we follow church teaching on conscience, it means that we're working at forming our conscience. It means it's a lifelong work. It doesn't end, you know? And we all work at, you know, getting ready for bathing suit season. We work for earning our degrees. We work to get promotions at our jobs. I mean, we understand sense of work in that, but we don't spend as much time working to form our conscience, which means gathering information and processing it and understanding it. If we don't understand something, finding experts who can. And honestly, I mean, in the history of the church, I think we're at a point in which there's almost no excuse for not forming your conscience because people have access to so much information. I mean, there's you have access to information everywhere. There's just no excuse. It's our own, you know, laziness, whatever. Maybe we'd rather go to the beach because we live in Southern California and, you know, it's February,
it's
we can go to the beach.
Right.
Right? But there's this work that has to be done. And again, it's To act in accord with one's conscience means to act with knowledge, to have knowledge about what it is that we're doing.
888-318-7884 is the number. Our topic today is Conscience King. Dr. Pia DeSeleni is our guest this hour. If you have any questions about conscience, how do we go about forming a conscience? Where does the conscience reside within me? What do we mean when we're talking about it? And how do we cooperate with our conscience in a way that does honor and glory to God? 888-318-7884 is the number. I am already ready for bathing suit season. It was very easy this year. I just got a bigger bathing suit.
See,
and I'm ready.
Yeah, now
there you
can
go.
Start working on
right
your
now
conscience.
I can start developing my conscience. 888-318-7884 is the number. This is Catholic Answers Live, broadcasting on location at the Los Angeles Religious Ed Congress. We'll be right back.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
This is Tim Staples, and I'm challenging you to take the 20 Answers Challenge. Catholic Answers 20 Answers series offers hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 20 books in the series, we're going to knock the price in half, and we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. Then we're going to take $10 from each set purchased and provide materials to our friends at St. Paul Street Evangelization so they can do what they do best, hit the streets and share the Catholic faith. That's $10 from every set you purchase going to help our fellow workers in the vineyard. You win, St. Paul Street Evangelization wins, the Catholic Church wins. That's a win-win-win. Together, we can be part of something great. Call 888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Why is it wrong to help someone commit suicide? Don't people have a right to die with dignity rather than being a burden to others? Does the Church teach that the terminally ill must be kept alive by machines for as long as possible? In 20 Answers, End of Life Issues, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, helping you unravel the controversies and confusions surrounding euthanasia, assisted suicide, and the rights of patients in our uncertain healthcare future. 20 Answers End of Life Issues is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, broadcasting on location at the Religious Ed Conference here in Los Angeles. Well, it's actually in Anaheim, which is in Orange County, but it's sponsored by the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Our guest this hour, Dr. Pia DeSeleni, a theologian, ethicist, and cultural analyst. And our topic is Conscience King. 888-318-7884 is the number. I am Cy Kellett, your host. 888-318-7884. We're happy to take your calls. And those of you who are here watching, if you have a question about conscience that you would like to ask Dr. Seleni, we'll be happy to take that question as well. Dr. Seleni, if you are ready, we will go right to calls.
I'd love it.
We have Leslie in Forest Hills, California, listening on EWTN. Leslie, you are on with Dr. Pia DeSeleni. What's your question, please?
Yeah, it's Wesley, but that's fine. My question is, the Bible talks about how you can have a conscience seared with a hot iron, and I believe that's from going against what the Holy Ghost is trying to tell you until you're just not listening anymore. But is God the king of our conscience, or is the conscience just formed by how we were raised in a Protestant church, a Catholic church, a Jewish synagogue, or whatever?
Okay, Wesley, hang on a quick second. Dr. Slaney, it's hard to hear here. I don't know if you heard the full thing, but essentially, is God the king of our conscience, or are we responsible to form and listen to the conscience on our own?
Well, it's a both and it's not subjective in the sense that maybe Catholics have one type of conscience and Protestants have another, and you know Muslims have a different. It's not subjective. It's based on truth. It's shaped by our experience, right? And we see that. We see that very commonly in the legal system, right? You'll have somebody an accused criminal, and somehow something was lacking in their formation as a child. They were never taught, you know, adequately right from wrong and so forth. So we are influenced by our environment, by our experiences. So there's that subjective element of it, but it's objective insofar as our conscience there is ordered towards truth, and that's truth with a capital T, and that's God. So someone can say, and this is where it gets so confusing, because we'll have people who say, well, you know, in good conscience, I don't agree with the church's teaching on X, Y, and Z, right? And I like to push people. I want to say, well, what do you mean, right? Do you truly not agree with the church's teaching? First of all, do you even understand the teaching? And I don't mean that in a derogatory or a demeaning way, but sometimes when we don't agree with something, sometimes it's because we don't understand it, right? So first, let's make sure that we're informed and that we understand it. And then, you know, then also I think we have to challenge ourselves, and that is, you know, at some point, if I don't understand something well enough, am I willing to submit to an authority that does? So when it comes to my car, I submit to the auto mechanic, right? The auto mechanic knows a lot more about my car, right?
Right.
There are a lot of people that know a lot more about computers than I know about computers, right? My doctor knows more about medicine. So we do trust authorities in all these other realms of our life, and I think it's important that in conscience, I think we do have to push ourselves when it comes to a point where there's a lack of understanding, perhaps even a conflict. Are we willing to trust the authority of the church? Now, the Catechism is clear that we have to act according to our conscience. Conscience reigns supreme. So if I truly believe X, Y, and Z, which is not in accord with the church, I have to act according to that, right?
Okay.
Now, I could I could make an act of the will and decide I'm going to submit to the authority of the church, and I'm going to hand that over. But I could also decide and have every right to act according to my conscience. However, the Catechism has this little catch there, because it also says we're still held responsible for what it is that we do, even if we do it, quote unquote, in good conscience. And so when I'm teaching, one of the examples I like to use is the Nuremberg trials, right? There were lots of people there who acted according to their conscience.
Right.
And they were soundly, you know, convicted for acting according to their conscience.
Right.
I mean, some of the, you know, Lenin, Stalin, Hitler, Pol Pot, all of these people have acted according to their conscience, right? So conscience is again, it's a tricky thing, and it's hard to take apart in a few sound bites. But it doesn't, the conscience is absolute only in a very narrow sense.
Yeah.
It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. Just because my conscience says, you know, because I think my conscience is telling me to do something that's actually wrong.
Right.
Doesn't mean that I get a get out of jail free card. I am still accountable to the moral order and the natural order. And this is where we see it. We see it in the court system, right? Classic case. How about we have a crime of passion, right? So in that person's mind that was committing the crime in the moment, right? It's a crime of passion. It makes sense to them. They're motivated. And they not just motivated, they have grounds for it, right? And then when it's examined in a court of law, ultimately, in most of these cases, it turns out that the person is guilty. So even in their head, what they thought they were doing, they were quite convicted, right? And and I think if you'd taken a quick survey of them, there would have been no doubt that what they were doing was the right thing. And they acted according to what some people loosely call conscience, and yet, forget the church. The world holds people accountable. You cannot act according to your conscience and get out of jail free card.
It seems like a different thing to ask, what's my conscience calling me to do, and ask, what's right and what's wrong? One of them seems to be a question about myself, and another seems to be a question about the nature of reality.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure I'm understanding your question. Sorry.
Well, you know, it's okay. It's probably not very clear, but the thing is about if I'm just satisfied just saying, well, my conscience is clear on that, and there's no questioning, well, yeah, but what is actually right and wrong? What's the objective right and wrong? Then my conscience is just kind of a circular thing that justifies what I want to do.
And it's not a developed conscience. It's a very weak conscience. And again, that's where I really press people. Developing the conscience is that's that work. It's the informing. One of our listeners here made the point during the break, confession is part of that, right? Every time I go to confession, in effect, I'm saying that my conscience is not supreme, right? Every time, because the reason I'm in the confessional is because I did things that I thought in good conscience I could do, should do, whatever. And that reckoning happens when I walk into confession, into that, and I'm experiencing that sacrament. And that's the time that I say, actually, my conscience is not supreme. I have to measure this against objective truth.
888-318-7884 is the number here at Catholic Answers Live. Our topic today is Conscience King. Our guest, Dr. Pia De Seleni. Thank you so much for that call, Leslie. Next, we go to Tom in Columbus, Ohio, listening on St. Gabriel Radio, 820 AM. Tom, what is your question for Dr. Pia De Seleni?
Greetings. Is intellect the same as knowledge? And if you can answer, if you have enough time, what is thought?
Okay, so I'm just going to convey the question, Tom, because it's hard to hear here. So is intellect the same as knowledge, and what is thought?
Okay, so intellect is this property of the soul whereby we are able to know, right? And knowledge, that's what it is that we come to know, right? So knowledge is the stuff, it's really what the intellect is able to acquire and to process. Thought is the way in which the intellect works, and it's the activity. So thought is the activity of the intellect, and it's the exercise of the intellect, if you will. I'm trying to think of a quick analogy, and nothing's coming to me, but I apologize.
We're very short on analogies here today at the Religious Ed Conference. I'd looked around. There's not that many here.
But can we get some extra ones next time?
Yeah, so thought is what happens to the intellect. The intellect is a quality of the soul to be able to know.
Well, thought doesn't happen to the intellect. It's what the intellect does. This is what the intellect does. It's the whole process, right? And so this is what goes on. I mean, it's really what goes on in the mind. Right. The mind, there's two aspects. There's intellect and reason. I don't want to get overly academic. And so it's the process of coming to know is what we loosely call thought. That's what's happening.
But one of the things that people may have is terrible regrets about things that they did at one time, and they truly didn't know that they were wrong. So it is possible to have either an immature conscience or not have done, or not just even maybe just had time to learn that, oh, that's wrong. And sometimes people are plagued by how could I have ever done that? And that kind of thing.
Well, we really see that in the post-abortion movement, you know, and with people who have been involved in abortion in some way. And many, 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 many times without full knowledge of what they were doing. And so, again, though, it's deciding to, are we willing to admit that God is God? Are we willing to admit? And so if he is the God that we've believe and teach as Catholics, right? He is this God who is all merciful, he's all loving, and he's also able to forgive us if we ask. He can't forgive us without us asking. We have to ask for forgiveness. That's the whole prodigal son thing, right? The son had to ask. Then are we willing to receive God's love? Are we willing to receive God's mercy? And sometimes it's not a question of what God's willing to do, it's a question of what we are willing to receive. And again, I go back to that example of the post-abortion movement, because some people just feel so overwhelmed with guilt that they don't even want to allow themselves to experience God's grace. And it's the pain of the guilt kind of feels right because of what they did. And yet, at some point, you have to say, well, wait a minute, am I going to acknowledge that God is God? And that's what humility is. Humility is understanding my relationship to God, right? And understanding who I am in relationship to God. And so that means that when I stand, if I'm in relationship with God, right, that I acknowledge who he is, and I acknowledge that he's able and willing to take away this pain and to take away the guilt. And so the step, again, sometimes we get so trapped in that pain, because it kind of, we feel that we should be punished, right?
Yes.
That we're unwilling to let go of that. And so it's not so much a question of God, it's a question of us.
Thank you. Dr. Pia Desilenyi is our guest today on Catholic Answers Live. The topic for this hour is Conscience King. We're broadcasting live from the Religious Ed Congress in Los Angeles. 888-318-7884 is the number. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Widely regarded as the premier magazine of Catholic apologetics and evangelization, our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine features the articles you want by the authors you know and respect. Year after year, Catholic Answers magazine has been bringing the very best teachers the Catholic world has to offer into thousands of homes on a regular basis. Top-notch writers like Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Mark Brumley, Tim Staples, Carlo Broussard, and Matt Nelson. The list goes on and on. It makes a perfect gift for family and friends, students, priests, and seminarians. Just about anybody you know. And of course, don't forget about a subscription for yourself. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com to subscribe today. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. For those of you just joining us, we are on location today, broadcasting from the EWTN booth at the Los Angeles Religious Education Congress. Our guest this hour, Dr. Pia Desilenyi, and our topic is Conscience King, your questions about conscience and what the Catholic Church teaches about the human conscience and what does God expect from us in the use of our conscience. 888-318-7884 is the number. We go now to Jack in Worthington, Ohio, listening on St. Gabriel Radio, 820 AM. Jack, you are on with Dr. Pia Desilenyi.
Hi. You asked for an analogy a few minutes ago. I've got a quick one. Father Damien the leper was known to be somewhat pig-headed, and Robert Louis Stevenson wrote a great piece about him, and in part of it, it showed his weaknesses, and there, I guess there was a time when he was going to hold on to this English Protestant's money that had been lost largely because he was an English Protestant, and they're all going to hell anyway. And he eventually came around, but it took a long time for him to realize he was doing the wrong thing. Well, this points up my question. If a great saint like that can't figure out what his conscience is trying to tell him, what chance do I have? And in addition to that, how do we know when our conscience talking to us, or just our subconscious mind, or something diabolical? And I'll just hang up and listen to you.
Thanks, Jack.
Well, I mean, I take my cue from St. John Paul the Great, and he said, you know, the saint is not the perfect person. It's the person who, when they fall down, gets up again. And so all of these great saints, it's not that they were perfect. It's that every time they fell, they got up. And again, it's a question, are we willing to trust God enough, or are we going to reside in our own feelings of inferiority? And most of the time, we're willing to stick with our own feelings of inferiority and our own perception of the world. And it takes a lot to pick ourselves back up and really to embrace God's view of the world. Now, the second question, can you remind me of that? Sorry.
Well, he was asking if how do we know it's our conscience speaking to us and not maybe an evil spirit or the subconscious of the mind?
This is a really, really important question, and I'm glad that you asked it. First of all, I mean, be informing yourself with the lives of the saints, the catechism, church doctrine, understanding it, because that's one thing. Is what your conscience, what you think is your conscience, is it telling you something that is objectively true or not? The other thing that's important, I think, is to try and find a good spiritual director. And that's the thing, is that we have so few spiritual directors really available. I mean, everybody should have access to a great spiritual director, but at least, you know, even have a good, try and have a good rapport with a priest, someone that you can go to so that when you do have these moments, and again, that's the humility that I think has to be present in conscience, is when you're willing to take your thoughts, your feelings, all that that's going on, and put it in front of someone that is someone that you trust, who might even tell you, that someone that you're willing to hear them say something that you don't want to hear, right? It's not just a yes man. This person is going to give you, tell you the hard diagnosis, even if you don't want it. And if you can find a person like that, and St. Francis de Sales, you know, in his introduction to the devout life, he encourages the laity in particular to find holy friendships, because we need people that we can talk to. So find someone, a spiritual director, a spiritual mentor, a priest, a good friend, and have it be someone that you can kind of bear your heart to, and that you can put this in front of them and say, you know, this is what I'm thinking, or this is what my conscience seems to be telling me. Am I crazy or not? Because, again, we're relational. We're not atomistic. We don't exist isolated in our own little worlds. We're relational. And so our knowledge and the way that we understand ourselves and others is all relational. And so part of understanding ourselves, where we're at in these moments, is finding people that we can trust to be in relation with. And those are the people that can lay it all out for us.
Now, that spiritual director part, I almost think that maybe we've lost some of that in the Catholic. People don't know that there's this whole tradition of having help in the spiritual life to both form your conscience and to actually know what is what your conscience is telling you.
Absolutely. And I think when I teach moral and spiritual theology to our graduate students, one of the things that I emphasize in the spiritual theology part is, you know, spiritual directors do not need to be priests. It can be a lay person. And I ask people, you know, really discern, because maybe some of you are called to be spiritual directors. And, it's not a lay spiritual director, and what changes is they're not hearing your confession, right? But hopefully you're being brutally honest with them and telling them what's going on in your life anyway. And I think that this is something that we really need to reawaken in the church, because everybody needs a spiritual director, everybody. And right now it's a handful of people that have spiritual directors. It's people that happen to even know what a spiritual director is. So I think you're right. We've lost this. It really needs to be recovered. And it could be that the laity are part of this.
And so at the Augustine Institute where you teach, do you prepare spiritual directors, or do you prepare people in theology and philosophy, or just theology?
Just theology. We do a master's degree in theology and then a master's degree in leadership for the new evangelization. So there are programs that do prepare people to be spiritual, at least spiritual mentors. There's the Apostles of the Interior Life. And so they're, I believe, an Italian order, and they run a program out of Kansas. And if I understand correctly, it's a 2-year program where you're going every few months, maybe I think it's twice a year or something for intensive courses, and then doing your work in between. There are other programs out there that train people in this, because it is very different from theology. I mean, hopefully they've got, a spiritual director has a very good understanding of theology, but spiritual direction is, it's much more subtle, quite honestly, and subjective.
And it is the case that many of the saints desperately needed spiritual directors. Like the obvious one is Saint Teresa of Avila with Saint John of the Cross. She spent a lot of her life without that spiritual direction, and when she got it, it made an enormous difference in her spiritual life.
I mean, it's almost a passionate difference when you read her letters. I mean, that's raw passion, what she experiences, and having a spiritual director.
Right. Our topic this hour is Conscience King. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live, and we are broadcasting live and on location at the Los Angeles Religious Education Conference. Dr. Pia De Seleni is our guest this hour, and you teach, and which you're also an associate dean at the Augustine Institute.
Right.
And I don't think any of our callers are going to ask it, and I want to ask it, and I don't want to be too political about it, but it does seem like there's almost a struggle in the church today over what does conscience mean, and I can't say that I know the origin of the struggle or what's at the root of it, but how do you see it? Is there a kind of struggle going on over the role of conscience in our faith life? And
absolutely. I mean, we're trying to understand, what does this mean? I mean, what is the role of conscience? And it's something, it's a term that's been so subjective for so long that we're kind of having to hammer this out. And I have to say, sometimes I look at the debates that are happening at very high levels, and I would think, I think some of my students could answer these questions a little bit better. I want to be careful here, but I also think it's a very important conversation that needs to happen, because obviously when you do have these misunderstandings and these debates, the best thing you can do is hammer it out and figure out what the teaching is. And that's the problem, is that we've been kind of going with kind of a very nebulous idea of what conscience is. And as difficult as this time is, I think it's also good, because it's forcing us to really address this question. And it's forcing us to address the question just on a level of formation.
888-318-7884 is the number. Catholic Answers Live, tackling the question of conscience. How much do you think, and I'm going to go right back to these callers, but how much do you think this kind of hyper-individualism of the world we live in gives us a warped view of conscience? That is, we live in a world where I'm like the king of my life as an individual, and you can't tell me what to do. And I suppose it may be thought of as, in another way, as a crisis of authority. But it makes it hard to both live in the modern world and truly grasp what the Catholic Church is teaching about consciences.
Yeah, it makes it challenging. And at the same time, I find that what the Catholic Church teaches is actually quite refreshing, because I feel, you know, if I'm looking at this in a perspective apart from the church, it's kind of like I'm unmoored, I'm untethered, I'm just kind of bobbing about, right? And the Catholic Church gives me something that makes me feel like I know now that I'm connected to something. I'm not out there just bobbing along in the ocean by myself, right? I'm anchored, right? And that's the thing, is I don't have to rely on myself. I'm able to turn to the church, you know, the church in her teaching, the church in the community of saints, the church in the sons and daughters of the church. I mean, there's so many different ways in which we can talk about the church. And to me, that's tremendous support to be able to have that. Whereas, you know, sometimes we get into such an individualistic approach of conscience that, I mean, the experience that I have is, again, kind of bobbing along in the ocean, you know, and not able to get in any direction and not having any support from anywhere.
Dr. Pia De Seleni is our guest this hour on Catholic Answers Live. 888-318-7884 is the number. The topic is Conscience King. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with your calls for Dr. Pia De Seleni.
Hi, this is Bishop James Wall from the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
How can the Eucharist truly be Christ's body? Does belief in the real presence mean that Catholics are cannibals? Do the Bible and early Christians support Catholic teaching on the Eucharist? In 20 Answers, the Eucharist, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, helping you deepen your own appreciation for this most precious sign of Christ's enduring presence in the world. 20 Answers, the Eucharist is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Mark 10, the Pharisees asked Jesus if he thought it lawful for a husband to divorce his wife, since Moses permitted divorce. Jesus responded that Moses allowed it only because of the hardness of their hearts. but from the beginning it was not so. The man and the woman become one flesh when they become husband and wife. Fortunate are those of us who have grown up under the influence of such a one-flesh union. It is real and it is powerful because it has God Himself as its source and as its bond. He is with them when they sacrifice for Him, for each other, and for their children. No two people can have a greater influence on the next generation than the parents of the members of that generation. They teach by the oblation of their marital union that they offer daily to God. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, broadcasting live from the Religious Ed Congress here in Anaheim. It's the Los Angeles Religious Ed Conference, and 40,000 Catholics will make their way here. At least 40,000 Catholics will make their way here over the course of this weekend. Our guest this hour, Dr. Pia De Seleni. Our topic is conscience king. We go now to Maria in South Dakota, listening on EWTN. Maria, it's a little hard for us to hear you, but you are on with Dr. Pia De Seleni.
Yes. I'm just wondering how to apply the teachings of the Catholic Church and our conscience to a business situation where one of our partners was involved in illegal activity, and through the sentencing, he had a very good defense attorney and basically probably got off the hook a little bit, but now we need to move forward with what has happened and his actions, and he doesn't seem to have remorse for what he's doing. And so I'm just wondering, how do you use your conscience and the teachings of the Catholic Church to look at the truth and then be able to move forward?
So I guess you're having, first of all, I'm a theologian, not a psychologist. I want to make clear there. But you're having the challenge moving forward. Is that what you're saying?
Right, with a business partner who was involved in illegal activity, and it was turned in, and it's done through the sentencing and everything, but this man doesn't seem to have any remorse for what he's doing, and we need to make the decision as to how we move forward.
And he's still part of the business.
Right, you know, to include him, not to include him.
I would probably recommend a really good mediation service, you know, something where people can put all the cards out on the table and there's a trusted third party that, you know, that both parties agree to. And because that's going to take a lot of transparency, and maybe part of the thing is that if you don't get the transparency, maybe that's a sign that the business can't continue in the same way, because that's a really complex situation, and without knowing all the details, it's hard to answer it. But I would encourage you to try and find some type of a mediator that both parties would trust, so that you can have that conversation, because it's a pretty intricate conversation.
Thank you very much, Marie. How much do you think, Dr. De Seleni, that in the world today, conscience is challenged because people work for, I don't know, big impersonal corporations where they may say, maybe one part of the corporation does something and they work in a different part, and yet they're wondering, should I be working here? It seems to me that we face the modern world, because it's so kind of vast and impersonal in many ways. If we want to work in this world, we want to make a living, we're facing challenges to our conscience a lot of the time.
Yeah, we are. I mean, a lot of times it seems like you've got to hold your nose if you want to be able to work in a particular organization or business, right? I think you really have to weigh the pluses and the minuses, the good, what's good and what's the bad here. If the bad is something intrinsically evil, you know, if you're, you know, a company during World War II, famous aspirin company during World War II that's actually producing the gas to execute, you know, the Holocaust victims, well, I think you need to run as far away from that as you can, right?
Right.
If you're, you know, working in an organization that's big and they've got one product that you're really not crazy about, but it's not intrinsically wrong, that's different. That's different. And I think, and it's also getting hard because a lot of organizations now, a lot of big organizations support policies. I mean, their HR departments have crafted the language to support policies, you know, in favor of same-sex marriage and
right.
favor of transgender rights and so forth. And so that's where I find a lot of the faithful really being conflicted. And in that regard, I would say, you know, again, because the organization has these policies, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have these policies. It's the organization, and there is some distance there. And in that case, the distance can be a help. The other thing that I would encourage people to do and is to organize, because in many of these businesses that I've seen, I mean, firsthand I've seen this, you know, a top company will come out with an HR policy in favor of same-sex marriage. And yet, I happen to know for a fact that there's an active Catholic community in that business. There's an active evangelical community. There was an active, you know, all these different active communities, active Muslim community that aren't being tapped, active Mormon communities. And so I would really encourage people in those times, in these situations, to start you're already existing as communities in these big companies. And go to your HR or even go higher and say, look, would you just not take a position on this issue? Because lots of us who work here, we make up a big community, right? And many of us have different values. And so we just, instead of just, we're not asking you to even support ours. We're just asking you not take a position
right.
so that we can kind of have this free space to coexist.
Right.
And that's what but it's challenging. I mean, there's no way about way around that.
It does seem particularly challenging because everything now seems so politicized that, well, no, we have to take a position. I can imagine many organizations saying, of course, no, we have to take this position. And there's new novel positions all the time that everyone's supposed to just kind of jump on the bandwagon with. And nope, we're with the bandwagon. There does seem to be less and less private space, even in private businesses. It all seems to be this kind of demand to get on board with this new ethic, which I would trace myself to the sexual revolution.
Sure.
Everybody get on board.
Sure.
Or get out of the way.
Get out of the way and, you know, everything goes. Don't judge me. There's, you know, let me do what I want. You're not the boss of me.
888-318-7884 is the number here at Catholic Answers Live. Happy to take your calls on conscience this hour with Dr. Pia DeSeleni. Kathy in Seal Beach, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. You are on with Dr. DeSeleni. What's your question?
Well, I'm coming on perfect because my question is the younger, like in our family, our younger generation, everything goes. And there's no conscience anymore in people, not just the young people, but they just make these decisions that affect their future, and they're, you know, they're moving in together, they want to get married, and you know, and I have grandchildren, I'm like the older aunt, and if you say anything, it's like, oh, you know, you get shut down right away, so you can't say anything that's going to offend anyone, or you know, speak the truth, you might say, on, you know, if you're going to walk in God's path, you know, you can't be making these decisions. Just because everyone's doing it doesn't make it okay. I don't know. It's frustrating.
So is your question for Dr. DeSeleni about what happened here that we seem to have this crisis of a lack of conscience among young people?
I see it a lot, and what do you say to these people, these kids, and these even, not even just the kids.
Yeah,
I call them kids, but they're old enough to know better, you know.
So that seems like a fair question. What do we say to those who are living this kind of, in this idea of, you can't tell me what to do?
I guess, you know, we started the conversation with what does conscience mean, right? It means with knowledge. And that's a lot of times people don't have all the information. They're making decisions without having the information. So I think one of the most important things is finding discerning a prayerful way to be able to talk to people about these difficult situations. And sometimes it's not talking it, sometimes it's living it. And I find a lot of people are upset because, you know, they're talking about younger generations that don't, you know, they don't see the importance of marriage and they're living together and so forth. I mean, honestly, in most situations, I can point back to close examples, if not in the family, very close to the family, where marriage was not lived, right? And as the church teaches, right? And I remember a friend of mine who went into a Catholic high school, and he did an amazing section on chastity, and the kids ate it up. They loved it, right? And so afterwards, he received an onslaught of criticism from the parents. The parents were livid because the kids had eaten up this teaching on chastity. They just loved it. You know, this is who they are. The kids went home, and they're talking about it, and it's clear that the parents aren't living it. Oh. And it's not that the kids were accusing, right? But there's a conflict here. And so I really think that we haven't, even if our immediate families haven't been touched by divorce, we are living in a divorce culture. And the surrounding culture is just permeated with that. So the surrounding culture, even if marriage has been lived intact in our own families, the surrounding culture is just permeated kind of with the destruction or the deconstruction of marriage. So I'm really hesitant to tell people to go and hit other people over the head. In fact, I say that we shouldn't.
So you're against hitting people over the head?
Okay, no anvils.
I want to just be clear
no
about
anvils,
that.
No anvils, no clubs, all right? Not even a Nerf bat. But I find that sometimes the people that should not be having these conversations are close family members. I very rarely hear where close family members have these conversations effectively. I think really...
It's too fraught within the family.
Step back, pray, and you never know. I mean, again, you know, we've been talking about this hour, our relationship to God, and do we have the humility to realize that God is God? Well, if we really think that God is God, then maybe he has some other ways of reaching these people beyond what we see. And so having that trust and having that faith. And then lastly, though, going back to living it, I think we all need to be making a commitment to living a culture of marriage.
I think we can get one more question in if we go real quick, Dr. DeSeleni. Jeff in St. Charles, Missouri, listening on KHOJ. If you could state your question really quickly, that will give Dr. DeSeleni a chance to answer your question.
Okay, I was wondering if there's a place in Catholic theology for someone who's in a state of ongoing, objective, grave sin, where there are strong forces that make it very difficult to stop committing those grave sins, if they cannot or will not repent with a firm purpose of amendment and so on, if they could, in their own conscience, say that moves it to a venial sin, and therefore they can go to Holy Communion even though they can't really commit to stopping.
I know that there are some people who will give that advice. I don't see it in the Catechism. I think if you go back to the Catechism, particularly the sections around 1780, I don't see the room for that. That if somebody's objectively in a state of grave mortal sin, then they cannot approach the Eucharist. But you ask, where's the place for them? Well, I mean, it's the place that's there for all of us, and that is in the confessional. We are all sinners, and we are all committing sins on a regular basis, unfortunately. That's the truth. And so the place for us is the confessional. And I would look, you know, I don't know what type of behavior is involved, but it might be something, too, where you start looking into some deliverance work if it seems like there's a very strong outside presence that's kind of driving this person, maybe in an addiction sense or something.
Well, you both did so well. Jeff, I'll ask you if you need to follow up at all. Did that help you?
Yes, I did. And I was more thinking of the big controversy going on now, I guess, you know, over divorce and remarriage or homosexual unions or that type of thing.
Okay. You want to address that real quick before we go, Dr. DeSeleni?
Very quickly.
Yeah, I know. That's like, here, 30 seconds, solve the world's problems.
Yeah. No, I think that, you know, the Holy Father has talked about walking with people. And so that does not mean none of us would want a doctor that ignores the fact that we have cancer, right? Or ignores that we have, that we're developing some type of a sickness, right? If you walk with somebody in truth, then you let them know the truth about themselves and about their health and well-being. And so I think the walking with that the Holy Father is talking about doesn't mean that we allow people to kind of rest in sin. And remember, sin is that's like the greatest sickness of all. It's worse than bodily sickness. It's spiritual sickness, right? That's what's serious. And that's the walking with, is helping people to come up with a diagnosis and a treatment.
Dr. Pia DeSeleni, thank you so much for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, it's been fun. Thank you.
And thank all of you for joining us on Catholic Answers Live today and this week. And we are done broadcasting from the Los Angeles Religious Education Conference. I am Cy Kellett, your host. We will be back again on Monday with more Catholic Answers Live. And in the meantime, Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. Stay in that light. We'll see you on Monday.